You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12s. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me as always, Rob Rang. Hope everybody had a fun and safe weekend. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. Last week, fans were finally able to catch their first glimpse of Jamal Adams in the Seahawks uniform. Yes, they had to see him on a live stream. Couldn't actually go to the training camp sessions because of COVID-19, but you still got to see number 33 out there playing for the Seahawks, flying around, already becoming a leader for that defense. And on Sunday, two more key Seahawks made their anticipated 2020 debuts, one being a player that's been in the Seahawks the last couple of years, and another one being another newcomer joining that revamped secondary, Chris Carson and Quentin Dunbar, both returning to the practice field, albeit in limited fashion.
It was limited fashion, but as you said, Corbin, it was exciting because it was much anticipated debuts for both players. We've talked so much about Chris Carson, and obviously coming off of the two consecutive 1,000-yard seasons, had the cracked hip, had the scary family issue that he had to deal with. And so I think that there was a little bit of concern. Is he going to come back onto the field? Is he going to be ready to hit the ground running? And that was one of the most exciting things, is that while he did not get the full assortment of running attempts and things of that nature, he looked really quick out of the backfield, made a couple of really nice catches. That was one of the things that excited me the most with the improvement that he made a year ago. And then, of course, with Quentin Dunbar and all of the things that we have been talking about with him, just to see number 22 on the field for the Seahawks and practicing that kick step with Pete Carroll, and just showing his length and speed on the outside in coverage. It was an exciting day to be at the VMAC watching the Seahawks live in practice.
One of the factors that went along with those two not seeing a ton of reps yesterday was that it was 90-plus degrees, which is uncharacteristically warm for the VMAC. And so the players were out there playing through heat, sweltering heat that they're not accustomed to necessarily. And both of these players hadn't been on the field recently, especially Dunbar, who has still been in Florida up to this point, had not participated in strength and conditioning in the first phase for the Seahawks of training camp. And so they are going to be careful with these guys. And that's actually been really a theme so far here, is Pete Carroll talked about it earlier today in a press conference with Seattle local media. He is making it a priority to keep his players fresh for the start of the regular season, especially considering circumstances. You saw yesterday, Dwayne Brown didn't participate in practice and was held out for a veteran day. Now he may have an injury, may not. First round pick Jordan Brooks did not practice today for the Seahawks. Didn't look like he was limping or anything. So maybe he was just being held out for a day. And they're doing that with players periodically just to keep them fresh. So we're going to see guys out there in the field. Maybe they'll only do 7-on-7 and individual drills and not do team, which is exactly what Quentin Dunbar did yesterday. They're going to get all those guys back into full football shape before they really push them heading into the regular season. As far as how these two players looked yesterday, didn't get a great look at Dunbar just given the drills that they ran out there. He was moving pretty well, got to see him do some tackling drills against dummies. They were still with just helmets on, no pads. Today they went with pads for the first time. Honestly, I got more of a look at Chris Carson yesterday because, me being the running back guy that I am, I was really curious to see, coming off that cracked hip that ended his 2019 season, how was he going to look out there, not just straight line speed-wise, but also cutting in open field. And he made a couple of really nice cuts as a runner and after the catch yesterday. And so that immediately eased all doubts about whether he was going to be ready to go or not. And all reports we've gotten in recent weeks anyway have indicated that Chris Carson was going to be good to go and that he was fully recovered from that hip injury. Yesterday certainly looked like that was the case, and so the Seahawks have their lead dog back. They're going to ease him back into things slowly, but their hope that they can get him a full workload by the time they get to week one and he can resume his role as the bell cow back for the Seahawks in their backfield.
Yeah, exactly. It's funny because I'm seeing you there, Corbin. I had a feeling that you were going to be watching Carson, watching the running backs. And so I had a couple of opportunities to watch Carson pretty closely. And once I saw a couple of those moves, I just thought, okay, check that box. He's good to go, at least from what we're going to be able to see here. Obviously, once they really start playing and hitting, for longer than a couple of series, like what we saw in today's practice, where, as you mentioned, the pads came on for the first time, then that's where you're going to see which guy, what type of shape these players are in. And we know what a fierce and physical runner that Chris Carson is. So, but every sense I got was that you can basically just check the box that Chris Carson athletically is every bit what he has been for the Seahawks the last couple of years. So I did focus a little bit more on Dunbar, and not only in the reps that he took, but in who he kind of stood next to when he was not actively, competing, who he was talking to as far as the coaches. And so it was comforting to see Pete Carroll go over there and personally work on it one-on-one. And Carroll talked about it during today's press conference, that how much that Dunbar had been working with Marquand Manuel, of course, a former Seahawk and a defensive backs coach. So the familiarity with the terminology, when to use certain strategies and certain techniques, just is going to make that transition that much better or that much easier for Dunbar. And again, athletically, you can just see what an easy mover he is for a big guy. There's not a lot of guys that have that height, that length, the long legs like that. They can change directions quickly, but he does. He accelerates fluidly too. So I think that's going to be a pretty seamless transition for him, and just make that secondary in Seattle, I think, is going to be every bit as exciting as we were hoping for. And then really quickly before we move on, again, Jamal Adams. I mean, just the impact, just the enthusiasm that it was obvious on the field yesterday when I was able to watch it in person. And then, of course, has been widely reported today that he had an interception of Russell Wilson with a terrific play as well. So again, I think that the secondary and the new additions to Seattle's defense here that we're talking about with Dunbar and Adams looks like it's going to be every bit as exciting as we hoped.
Looking at Dunbar, you can see the former receiver background immediately. Like you said, just a smooth runner for a player of his size. Now, we haven't gotten to see how that looks out there as far as kick step technique and things of that nature, but compared to some of the other veteran corners they brought in, we've talked about before players like Kerry Williams in the past coming in that really struggled or just decided not to use the technique that Carroll was trying to teach them and ended up not working out. One of the reasons that this was a trade back in March that people were really excited about is because of Dunbar's past work with Marquand Manuel. He's known him for a long time, so he has been familiar with this technique for a while. That is going to give him a major advantage here, especially given his circumstances that he got to training camp late. There were no off-season programs, no mini camps. That's going to be an advantage for him. He should benefit immensely. And of course, having Pete Carroll in your pocket all the time as a resource is always a big deal as well. When we come back in the second quarter, it's time for our Monday mailbag. Tons of questions from you, the listeners. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me as always, Rob Rang. Later in the show, we're going to talk about some observations, some takeaways from practices 4 and 5 for the Seahawks at the VMAC. But first, tons of questions from you, the listeners, for our Monday mailbag segment. Let's get to it. First one coming from Mike Sent. He tweets, I recently read that Dallas will have fans in attendance while other teams have already said no to fans. What is Seattle doing regarding fans? And do you feel like the NFL should have a uniformed plan for fans? So, Rob, I can tell you at this point that there's been nothing specific that has been given out by the Seahawks in regard to what they're planning to do with this. If I had to make a prediction, I would say at least the first month or two of the season. Based on what I've been told, there aren't going to be any fans at CenturyLink Field. There certainly won't be any when they're doing their mock scrimmage later this month at CenturyLink Field. Maybe down the road, there will be some changes if things start to get better, that maybe they can have 20% capacity. I think it's the Chiefs that I actually saw a little bit ago that actually are planning to have 22% capacity at Arrowhead Stadium. So there are some teams that have plans in place to try to do this. A lot of teams are scrapping fans, at least for the first part of the season. But I do think that it creates an unfair advantage during a time where some teams really don't have the ability to bring fans in.
Well, and that's what's going to make this fascinating, is because the way I understand it, Corbin, is I believe that it's basically going to be determined either by the mayors or the governor of the state. And in the case of Washington, I think that we all realize that Governor Jay Inslee is basically, mandated that no groups, larger than say, a couple of dozen or 50 or 100, whatever the case, whatever region of the state that you may be in, are able to congregate safely. And so I don't know, this might be a decision that's frankly is out of the Seahawks' hands in this point. So I think that I would agree with you. I think that it is an unfair advantage to the teams that are able to have that type of a noise factor, especially a team that has such an incredible fan base the way that the Seahawks do. And I think that certainly the Seahawks would love to be able to have their fans there, but they're going to have to kind of abide by the rules that are set in place for them. I can tell you this, I've been going to training camps for a long time. I've never been up on that berm with a mask on, but that is one area in which the Seahawks very much were following the guidelines that's been passed down to them.
Steve Alvera tweets, any free agent signings that you predict before week one? So we've had all the speculation, Rob, over the past few weeks about various players that could potentially be signed by Seattle, and yet here we are now, almost a week into training camp on the field work, and the Seahawks have not signed any additional free agents, at least nobody notable to this point. So I guess what Steve's asking is, if you had to make one prediction, one what you think would be a safe prediction right now for a player that is going to be on the Seahawks roster in week one that isn't right now, who would it be?
I think that you have to go with the receiver, Josh Gordon, just because of the familiarity, because of the interest. I think that the Seattle would still like to have another set of hands out there to provide them a little bit of depth, the receiver position in terms of just experience and rapport with Russell Wilson. I think that there's going to be a lot of buzz out there about defensive linemen, and that's something to consider. And I will say this, I noticed that the New Orleans Saints today, Corbin, worked out five different tight ends. And we've talked before about what a stacked roster that is for the Seahawks. It perhaps maybe wouldn't be a free agent move, maybe it'd be a trade. But I looked, my very first step was to look at the New Orleans Saints defensive line group, and they have a lot of bodies there, a lot of really talented football players. So I'll say this, I'm certain that John Schneider is going to be looking under every single rock he possibly can to be able to add talent, and it doesn't necessarily have to be in the free agent realm.
Interesting that there could be a trade, and we've seen John Schneider do this several times. Justin Coleman back in the day came to the Seahawks late in the game. They've made several trades over the past few years leading up, and last year obviously Jadeveon Clowney was traded right before week one, and so the Seahawks have been known to make moves like that. If I had to make a prediction right now, obviously I could just be typical here and agree with you on Josh Gordon, but I'm actually going to go with Marcell Dareus as my pick. And I know Pete Carroll, answering my own question today, seemed pretty optimistic about their defensive line in the interior, but I still think that they want to add another big-bodied veteran to that unit. They only have four games of experience behind Jaron Reed and Puna Ford. So I think Marcell Dareus ends up being the guy. I know Damon Harrison's been on the radar for a long time. I just don't know if Snacks wants to play this year. He just had a child, the COVID situation, getting to be an older player. I don't know if he's interested in playing or not at this point. So Marcell Dareus is going to be my prediction here to bolster that interior defensive line. Piccolo Rick tweets, have any of your preconceptions about players or positional groups changed now that training camp is in full swing?
I think that's a great question. This is one of my favorite questions I think I've ever heard in our doing this, Corbin. So thank you for the question, because I'll call myself out. I don't think you're doing a service to our listeners, and I don't think as a scout that you're worth your weight in salt if you are not changing your opinion when you watch players. I can tell you this. I mean, when the Seahawks first drafted Tyler Lockett, I did not think that physically he'd be able to hold up. When Earl Thomas was first drafted by the Seahawks, I argued that I thought that he should play the cornerback position because, again, physically, I didn't think that he could hold up. And some of the players that I've knocked on so many times, Ethan Postick being one of them, that I've been very impressed with how he's played so far. And just the agility that he's shown, springing out of his stance and blocking at the second level, the power that he's shown, so I'm encouraged. And the other one I would mention would be Cedric Oboye. And that's a player that I hope to kind of talk about a little bit more. But you could just see Pete Carroll in the press conference, they almost just jumped out of his seat when he started talking about just the talent that Oboye is. So, you know, these are some guys that maybe are recognizing that this is basically their shot to be a starting player, or in the case of Oboye, maybe the first guy off the bench, but certainly an opportunity to be on a team that really has the chance to go somewhere. So, yeah, I think that there's a lot of players that have definitely changed my opinion so far. And in virtually every case, the most exciting thing about it, in virtually every case, it's been that they've improved their play over what I'd seen previously.
I'm going to throw out a name just from the four or five practices the Seahawks have had. I thought that Alton Robinson, the first practice that I was in attendance for, looked pretty darn heavy, and he just didn't look like he was moving quite as I expected. But yesterday, I thought he was one of the most impressive players on the field. And from what I'm seeing from other reporters today, including Greg Bell of the Tacoma News Tribune, he had another really strong outing on the practice field today. And you and I were excited about Alton Robinson because we both viewed him as better than a fifth-round pick. I thought he was a really solid day two pick, and they got him in the fifth round. And I just thought yesterday he just looked different. In only a few days later, and that's the thing about these training camps. I think Pete Carroll mentioned it. He got so much stronger this offseason that maybe he got to camp just a little bit heavier, wasn't necessarily in bad shape, but you get a few days out there running around, especially in 90-degree heat like yesterday, and you start to lose a little bit of that weight. He just looked faster to me yesterday and, again, had a really strong day today, according to a number of reporters. So I could even say in the last week that there's been a player that has swayed my opinion a little bit just with the way he's practiced in Alton Robinson. Tom Dean tweets, how much is playbook secrecy, knowledge, and tactics an issue when it comes to playing against teams who now have your former players playing for them?
No, I don't think it's as much as you might think. Especially when you have, like, say, a veteran quarterback like Russell Wilson. Let's say, Earl Thomas is going to, going up against him. Of course, he's going to have that familiarity. Richard Sherman's going to have that familiarity. But I think that really at this level, most of the players have already kind of seen, and the coaches have already kind of seen just about everything that you've got. It's just who can, who can actually get the job done when you're actually physically playing. Who can I can't think of the word I want to use, but who is able to actually, like I said, get the job done? And that to me is the difference. I mean, I think of the great Seahawks teams that we've seen in the past. One of the things I used to love is when they had Walter Jones and Steve Hutchinson there on that left side, and everybody in the field knew that they were going to run that left side, and they were still able to do it. And I think that is the case here with the Seahawks. Everybody knows the Seahawks are going to run the ball a lot. They're going to do their play action. Russell Wilson's going to do what he does. Seattle's going to play a fairly vanilla defense that has gotten, cracks and jokes from some of the coaches out there, but it may be fairly vanilla, but that's one of the reasons why the Seahawks are able to play as fast and as fiercely as they are, and ultimately have the success that Pete Carroll not only has had in Seattle, but obviously going years back as well.
I don't think it's a big deal at all, because the truth of the matter is most of these teams are running a lot of the same concepts, and they just have different terminology. It comes down to execution and preparation and which guys are going to put the time in watching film and stuff. You can bring in a player that plays for a division rival and you can try to pick his brain about, well, what do they like to do in certain situations? But you can already do that. It's called film study. And so I really don't think it's a big deal, especially now when we're in the free agency era and players change teams like they change clothes in a lot of regards. I don't think it's a big deal at all. So whenever I see articles about that, oh, they're bringing in an NFC West rival to help get an advantage, they just like the player. I don't think it has much to do with that, if anything to do with trying to get playbook information and knowledge about your upcoming opponent. Last question real quick, coming from DeKalen Season. What player from what you've seen in training camp is ready to make a big leap from last year? Really hard to answer this question without many padded practices, but I'm sure, Rob, like me, that you've had a couple that have jumped out that maybe surprised you.
Well, I'm a little that he surprised me, but Rasheem Green has been somebody I know that's caught both of our attention. When Seattle drafted him a couple of years ago, I kept using the phrase that he's just a pup. And that's the thing. I certainly don't mean to be disrespectful in any way towards him by describing him in that way. But I just mean that I think that this guy has all the physical ability that you're looking for. I don't think that he's going to be a 12-sack guy screaming off the edge, that kind of a guy. But I think that, we've used that kind of tired comparison of Michael Bennett so many times in the past. But that is the type of player that I really believe that Green can be. I think that he can move inside for him. He can give you enough speed off of the edge as well as the power inside to be able to really to be a difference maker for the Seahawks. He led the team in sacks a year ago. I think that Rasheem Green is probably your favorite to lead the team in sacks this season. I'm excited about what Daryl Taylor and Alton Robinson and Benson Mayoya and Brewster and all these other guys can do, but I don't know that any of them have the upside that Green has, as well as the fact that he has just enough experience to really know what he's looking to do this season.
I'm going to go the opposite side of the line with a player that has been in the league now for 8 years, and that's Benson Mayoya. He has just blown me away with how fast he is off the snap, and we already know that based on his film, but seeing it in person up close at practice really put in perspective what kind of a player that he's really developed into. Like Pete Carroll said today, he is now a true pass rusher. He came into the league as a raw outside linebacker, defensive end hybrid out of Idaho. He had to earn a roster spot by trying out as an undrafted rookie, and then they signed him after that point, played in 2 games that year. Boy, has he come a long way. And right now, there's no question in my mind, especially with Bruce Irvin getting most of the reps at the Sam linebacker position, that Benson Mayoya is your starter at the Leo position, and I think he is absolutely going to wreak havoc off the edge for this football team. Might be the best free agent signing that they made this offseason when it's all said and done. When we come back for the third quarter, it's time to break down the last couple of practices for the Seahawks at their 2020 training camp. We're going to look at 3 or 4 observations apiece from what we've been able to see on the practice field the last couple of days. You won't want to miss it. You're listening to Locked On Seahawks Podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Welcome back. Glad to have you joining us here on the Locked On Seahawks Podcast, Monday edition. I'm your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me, as always, draft guru Rob Rang. We are now almost a week into on-field training camp practices. It took forever to finally get to this point, but finally today, the Seahawks put on more than just their helmet. They had shoulder pads on as well, their first padded practice of training camp. Let's break down some observations from the last couple of days. Now, I'm going to be upfront with our listeners. It's a little bit different this year in what kind of information that reporters are allowed to report. There's an open segment of practice each day. That's typically your individual drills, maybe some positional drills, maybe 7-on-7, where the media is allowed to report, allowed to live tweet, take pictures, etc. And then after that, it kind of becomes a closed file. Media members can watch, but aside from that, a little bit different than normal. And so most of these observations that you and I are going to be talking about are things that we've noticed during those open periods of practice.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is that I'm sure there's a lot of people who are either watching these practices on Seahawks.com or on Q13. They're broadcasting an hour from 1 to 2 p.m. virtually every day of practice, and you're able to kind of glean some things from that. But as you just mentioned, Corbin, practice goes on for another half hour to an hour after that, and that's where the Seahawks themselves are trying to basically be able to evaluate. And we're talking about the NFL. I would not put it past other teams to be watching these exact same things to make sure that they can get as much information as they possibly can too. So you're right. There is a lot of things that are happening behind the scenes that are going to dictate the decisions that the Seahawks make. But there certainly have been some players who jumped out to me. And one of the areas that I would start is just with Seattle's best player, and that of course being Russell Wilson. Just the brilliance of his passing, and because he has been as accurate as he has. And Geno Smith made some beautiful throws, yesterday while I was there to watch as well. And you and I have both talked about Greg Olsen. We can just kind of gush about just what a pro that he is. But I mentioned the wide receiver, Philip Dorsett. I have a receiver. We've talked about this a lot. I still think it's a possibility that may wind up being Josh Gordon. But the Seahawks can't plan for that at this point. You know, I mean, Gordon has proven himself to be the opposite of reliable, even if he is allowed back into the league. So Dorsett, on the other hand, with the familiarity that he has with Brian Schottenheimer, with the speed that he possesses, his ability to run virtually every route, and again, Russell Wilson's accuracy has just been absolutely phenomenal. So to me, that was absolutely one of the big takeaways that I had from watching these practices, just how on rhythm Seattle's offense looked, especially in the passing game.
DK Metcalf just looks like he's ready to take off, that he's ready to be that 1,000-plus yard receiver. We talked about it a few days ago that maybe he looks a little bit bigger than he did last year, but I think he's just a freak. It doesn't look to me like it's bad weight. I mean, he's still flying past cornerbacks, and there was a play yesterday. It was clearly the play of the day. Russell Wilson just dropping it in the bucket after Metcalf took an inside release, worked vertically, and then started to work his way back outside, and he beat Shaquille Griffin. He had Quandre Diggs coming from his free safety spot, so there was pretty good coverage there, and yet Russell Wilson's throw along with DK Metcalf's size creating a matchup problem for both those secondary players. They were able to connect on a long bomb, and that was really the play of Sunday's practice. So you could see Russell Wilson in midseason form in that regard, and you could see DK Metcalf picking up right where he left off when the playoffs ended in January. I want to talk about a couple receivers not named Lockett or Metcalf, though. I'm glad you mentioned Philip Dorsett, because Russell Wilson and Geno Smith were looking for him frequently during yesterday's practice. He did have one throw that went through his hands from Wilson that slipped through that he probably should have caught, but otherwise made a couple of nice catches in traffic. And then, of course, he caught a vertical bomb down the middle of the field from Geno Smith as well. You mentioned Smith throwing some bombs. He looked pretty darn good in yesterday's 7-on-7 session. The other receiver I'm going to throw out there is a one that's starting to get a lot of buzz on social media, and I think the hype is, at this point, justified. We see this year in and year out at Seahawks camp. There's always a receiver that just kind of emerges out of nowhere. We remember what Kaysen Williams did a few years back. And they've had a few other players, Malik Turner 2 years ago. Last year was Jazz Ferguson. This year it's Cody Thompson, 6'2", 205 pounds, former standout at Toledo. And last year he spent his rookie season bouncing on and off Seattle's practice squad, originally was signed by the Chiefs. And I'll tell you what, Rob, every practice that I have been to, that kid has made a couple of sensational leaping grabs, high-pointing the football, and it's something that he did a lot when he was starring for the Rockets. And this is a player that, yes, he was playing against MAC competition, not quite as good as, say, going up against the SEC or some of the Power 5 conferences, but he had over 1,200 receiving yards and 11 touchdowns his junior year, and then he had another 10-touchdown season to close out his college career. And so this guy has had a nose for the end zone, and he caught a touchdown in Friday's practice. It seems like every day he's doing something that's making those that are on the sideline look like, hey, who is this kid? And it just stinks for a player like that there are no preseason games, because if he was able to have a couple good preseason games on top of what he's doing at practice, this might be a guy that nobody was picking to the 53-man roster that finds his way onto the team.
He could. And I'm happy that you mentioned some of the other receivers, you know, that have kind of jumped out in this, you know, in this similar fashion in recent years, because they are similar kind of guys, just in their build, their physicality, their body control, their ability to high point passes. That's really what makes Cody Thompson, what made Kaysen Williams, it made Jazz Ferguson, those kind of guys made them kind of stand out. And so it's very encouraging, because again, when you have a quarterback as accurate as Russell Wilson, if you just give him a sliver of room, then he is able to create that or be able to put the ball where he needs to. Cody Thompson's absolutely taking advantage of it. When we were talking before about some of the receivers who have kind of jumped up, I don't know that anybody has made more impressive catches so far. Obviously, he needs to continue that. And, of course, one of the things that you have to mention is that at least early on in practice, the Seahawks really do, and I believe this is the all of the NFL, but they want the defensive backs to basically kind of allow the catches to, you know, without having the bodies get tangled up and possibly create injuries. And so that's something that you have to kind of keep in mind. But at the same time, Cody Thompson is getting his opportunity, and he is running with it so far.
I've been really excited seeing his development. There's a few other receivers that have been making plays. Freddie Swain wasn't out there yesterday at practice. He's dealing with a minor groin injury, but the first couple practices, he made some really nice plays, and Pete Carroll name-dropped him today for that reason. So there's a lot of encouraging developments there at the receiver position. That said, they've been playing most of these practices on air, so now things really are going to start getting real now that the padded practices have started up today. I want to just call out Dwayne Brown real quick, because you don't see guys of his athleticism coming into the league. There are a lot of rookie tackles that are in this year's class, which was a really darn good class, as we've talked about time and time again, a lot of really good prospects. You just don't see very many guys at 315 pounds that come in that can move like Dwayne Brown still does at the age of 35. And seeing a clip of him chasing down, trying to catch Jamal Adams after his interception today, it just put in perspective what a rare athlete that Dwayne Brown is. And so for me, I think it's just one of those things where I think all of us need to appreciate just how great of a career and how good of a player that Dwayne Brown still is, protecting Russell Wilson's blind side.
Dwayne Brown is absolutely remarkable. I mean, I you know me, Corbin, we talked about this all the way leading up to the draft. I was absolutely convinced that the Seahawks were going to be investing an early draft pick in a left tackle to groom. And when they did not, you know, I reached out to some of the guys I know on the Seahawks team and, you know, in their scouting department and whatever, you know, whatever the case might be, and just kind of like, hey, are you anticipating Dwayne Brown playing forever? And they're, you know, almost to a man, their response was, well, as long as he keeps playing this way, sure, yeah, maybe we will. And it's just, I mean, to me, not only a great athlete, but just think about this. I mean, this is a training camp. It's hot out there. We know this is a relatively meaningless play. Dwayne Brown had a veteran day off yesterday, and all these players out there, there's not a player on this team, with the exception of Russell Wilson, Bobby Wagner, that probably has his spot on this roster more firmly etched in stone than Dwayne Brown. And to show the hustle, the determination, the competitiveness to go and try to race down Jamal Adams, you know, after an interception, I mean, just that is going to be more of a learning tool for everybody else sitting and watching on the sideline, that, wow, I've got to step up my game if this multiple Pro Bowler and maybe someday Hall of Fame left tackle is still competing at this point. And the other thing I would mention too, remember when the Seahawks traded for Dwayne Brown, there was all this talk, you know, what a malcontent that he was in Houston and forced his way out. I mean, this is exactly the type of player that the Dwayne Brown was at Virginia Tech, the type of the player that he was for the Houston Texans before he basically got jettisoned out of there, and everything that the Seahawks could have possibly hoped when they made that move.
It turned out to be one of the best trades that John Schneider has ever made. Yes, they gave up quite a bit to get Dwayne Brown, but they brought him in, they treated him with respect, and he was willing to play out the rest of the season and ultimately the rest of the offseason before he signed his extension in August. And so, yes, he's getting to be an older player, but still an outstanding athlete. I love that you mentioned just the fact that he is putting on display the leadership and the effort that is necessary to succeed in the NFL. He's putting it on the line in a training camp practice when, like you said, his roster spot is secured. He doesn't have to run down Jamal Adams or make a push to do that to make the team. And yet he's out there doing it. If you're a young player and you see that happen, it immediately tells you, wait a second, I need to step up my game. If Dwayne Brown's doing that, my roster spot could be in jeopardy. And so I think there's nothing but positives from that. Let's talk defensive side of the football. You already hit on Rasheem Green, and I think he has looked fantastic so far, not just physically. I mean, you see how he looks on the field right now. He's chiseled. I mean, he is cut. He's ripped at 280, 285 pounds. He just looks like he has added significant burst to that first step off the line. In every drill, he just looks faster and quicker to me than at any point in his first 2 years that we've seen from the young man. And Brian Monet, of course, today, Pete Carroll just raving about him, talking about film study that he did on the defensive tackle this summer, how he felt like he played really good football when he had his opportunities, just 89 snaps as a rookie last year. But I was asking about concerns with the depth of defensive tackle position, and he immediately said, look, we know that Brian Monet is a football player and that he's going to be in the rotation. And he is now only 340 pounds. He's lost some weight, guys. So he's still a big dude, but he's in better shape. He is as Pete has said before about a few other bigger guys, he's a svelte 340 pounds, and he's looked the part of the field so far, and you can see the effort he plays with. Two of his plays were shown to the team this morning during one of their meetings. As an example, this is the effort that Pete Carroll wants on the field, and so he has done nothing but help himself the first five practices here, securing reps behind Puna Ford and Jaren Reed.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely appropriate. We're talking about Brian Monet and the effort plays. As a former undrafted free agent, chasing down guys on the perimeter. I mean, you don't see guys who are, 340, 350 pounds that are running all the way to the sidelines in 5, 10, 8, yards downfield. Just that type of effort right after we were just kind of extolling the virtues of Dwayne Brown. You know, as I mentioned, a former first-round pick whose placement in this league is as secure as anybody. So, yeah, that is exactly the mentality and the competitiveness that the Seahawks are looking to bring in. And those are a couple of players that I certainly would want to mention as well. I know there were so many people who were so down on LJ Collier a year ago, and I get it. I mean, you have these expectations when they're drafted that high. But, Collier looks a lot more svelte, to use that word, as well. And just his quickness, his explosiveness, we talk so much about the heavy hands and all that kind of stuff, but that's one thing if that's all you have, but you have to have something to complement that. It's like, you see, we should have Nick Lee on here right now talking about baseball and his beloved Padres, because if you have a guy who all he has is a fastball and he's got no off speed pitch to kind of get batters off balance, that's not going to work. I think Collier basically tried to just rely on his physicality a year ago, and that's not going to cut it in the NFL. But it looks like he's sprinkling in a little bit more of a pass rush arsenal. And then again, he just looks like a different guy out there in terms of his initial explosiveness off the line.
And that leads me to my closing remark here for our Monday show, because there's been a theme here with the last couple of defensive guys that we've talked about: more quickness, more explosion, more burst. You can say that about this entire defense. That was probably the biggest reason that this defense struggled last year. They had their issues with missing assignments, especially holding the edge in run contain, but it just, compared to previous defenses for Pete Carroll, this team just didn't have the same athleticism. And no offense to Bradley McDougal, because he's been a very solid safety in the NFL. But Jamal Adams is just on a whole other level in terms of his athletic tools, his speed. He is just on another playing field. There's a reason he was a first-team All-Pro last year. And then on the defensive line, Rasheem Green is playing faster than he ever has. Benson Maioa gives them the Leo they did not have last year, a guy that can just pin his ears back and get off the edge. Jordan Brooks looks every bit like a first-round pick out there, the way that he runs sideline to sideline and shoots gaps to get into the backfield. You can already see that on the field in just a handful of practices. And Bruce Irvin, 33 years old, is still a fantastic athlete at 250-plus pounds. He can still play that Sam linebacker position, and he's playing with the first team there throughout the first five practices as well. So just, every level of the defense, as Carroll said, we have outstanding speed. And that was something he highlighted today. And it has been very evident these first couple practices that they are head and shoulders above last year's unit as a whole in terms of overall speed and athleticism.
Yeah, I agree 100%. I think that was their number one priority in the offseason. I know that they talked about improving the pass rush. Shocker. What if the Seahawks maybe fibbed? You know what I mean? I think that their priority was adding speed, because every move that they've made, you just outlined a bunch of them, Quentin Dunbar being another one, that, in every player that they replaced, at every single position on defense, whether it be defensive tackle, defensive end, inside linebacker, outside linebacker, corner and safety, the players that they replaced, they did so with a faster player, a younger player. I think that this is the focus, that they basically recognize that, hey, we still have to try and compete against the black and blue running kind of teams like the San Francisco 49ers. But the way that the league is shifting shifting towards the passing game. The Patrick Mahomes, the Kansas City Chiefs are going nowhere except, you know, maintaining, you know, their position as one of the power teams. The Arizona Cardinals are coming. The Rams are coming as well. I mean, those are the teams that have the speed that scares you. And Seattle was simply not able to match up. They had to rely on Russell Wilson being able to kind of pull it out of his hat, you know, at the end, because they just didn't have the speed to compete. This team has the speed to run with the opposing offenses, and that's why I think that this is one of the best and certainly most improved teams in all of the NFL.
Make sure to follow me on Twitter at CorbinSmithNFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. If you'd like to be a featured sponsor on our podcast, you can contact me, LockSeahawks@gmail.com. Subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, wherever you listen to your podcast, by going to LockedOnSeahawks.com. Just like last Tuesday, we're going to be celebrating Throwback Tuesday by looking back at a statistical oddity in Seahawks history. Plus, we're going to check out where the offensive line stands 5 practices into the 2020 training camp. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. Go Hawks.